Now on 710 WOR.
Sitting in for Mr. New York, Mark Simone. Here's Joe Concha.
Hello, everybody. It's the Friday of Labor Day weekend. Not exactly celebratory. By the way, this is Joe Concha, as the voice of God just told you. I am a Fox News contributor, also a media and politics columnist for The Hill, that is in Washington, D.C. Hey, just a couple things I want to tackle here first, because it's maddening to listen to. As far as these floods, and they were devastating. I mean, you look at the numbers, guys, gals, everybody listening out there. Hopefully you're on your way to the Jersey Shore or somewhere, parts Long Island, Connecticut, Hershey Park, underrated, Pennsylvania. Either way, hope you're going to have some fun this weekend. The weather looks pretty good for the most part. But here you have, I mean, what do we got? 25 dead in my home state of New Jersey, 13 in New York City alone, just horrible, tragic things that we hear about, like over in Queens, where you had a two-year-old die in a basement apartment from the flooding. You see some, thankfully, inspirational stories. A man in his wheelchair who was trapped in his apartment and his poodle were saved. That just hit just a couple hours ago. So you're going to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to this. But then we have the soon-to-be ex-mayor of New York City talking about climate change. And the reason why this happened was because of climate change. And it's such, I can't use the word on the air, but it starts with bull, because that's what it is. To use a Biden word, it's malarkey. Because the whole ruse is that if you pass the Green New Deal that your Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of the 14th District wants to pass, to the tune of trillions of dollars in spending, then somehow this doesn't happen anymore. That somehow Russia and China and India, the three biggest polluters on the planet, far more than us, that even though they don't enact anything to stop all these emissions and everything, and climate change is real, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's not, right? But there are certain extremes that we could that we're talking here in terms of how you tackle it, right? And the more sensible thing, quite frankly, is you have to improve the infrastructure. These sewers that we have here in New York, where I used to live in Hoboken for 15 years, they are 100 years old. They are not built for this sort of rain. But again, let's say you pass all those trillions of dollars to battle climate change through the Green New Deal, right? And China, Russia, and India, they continue to pollute. These storms will continue to happen. Right. And even if China, Russia and India, they all do their part, it's not like suddenly a wall goes up and we don't get any hurricanes anymore. That's not how it works. But that's how it's sold. Spend all this money and you're not going to have these problems anymore. Oh, yes, you will. We have seen these problems going back centuries. We've had flooding in New York before. We've had flooding in New Jersey before. And look, the damage caused by floods, this is an actual stat, in the U.S. has declined dramatically in the last 70 years. The reason New York flooded is because of bad infrastructure and not a few more inches of rain. All right. So then when you have the mayor of New York, who, again, great job, you think he would have done a little bit more in terms of warning people that, boy, this is a big storm coming our way and you should take the necessary precautions. Didn't hear much from the mayor because he's already checked out. He checked out 2 years ago. He used this term to run for president, basically, where he got, to quote Dean Wormer from Animal House, 0.0% in the polls. So now he's just mailing it at this point until Eric Adams most likely replaces him as the next New York mayor. But to go on national television last night and talk about, well, this is because of climate change, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And you could have prepared your people better. And this is why I'm all for infrastructure as far as passing a bill that tackles roads and bridges and power grids and sewers and drainage and so on. Yes, we have to improve those. And if you want to spend $1.5 trillion on that, then that is a worthy investment because of the return on investment. That if you spend that money and you truly fix this stuff, right? And not just handouts to unions and everything and all these construction workers and we do a half you know what job on it and it doesn't fix anything. If you truly tackle the problem, then ultimately the money you save from all this damage not happening in terms of flooding in terms of a lot of things, then it makes sense. Look at New Orleans, for example, right? They got hit by the Category 4 version of this storm that hit us. And the levees held up because we invested in fixing them. So we didn't have another Katrina. And now all the money saved from levees not breaking in terms of what New Orleans would have to spend if they did, it all makes sense. So yes, yeah, spend that money. But instead, we're governed by children, ladies and gentlemen. We're governed by the Nancy Pelosi's and the Bill de Blasio's and the Joe Biden's and the Kamala Harris's of the world. Where is Kamala Harris, by the way? You could find Jimmy Hoffa before you could find Kamala Harris. You don't see the vice president very often. Just saying. Never saw such an historic figure so hidden. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. But we're governed by children because, again, it's like, okay, good. You came together and you passed this $1.2 trillion in infrastructure spending to tackle the things that we just talked about. But then you're going to add another $2-3 trillion to add in the name of infrastructure, because everybody likes that word, in terms of childcare, in terms of the infrastructure of family, which has nothing to do with roads and bridges and power grids. But that's where we're going to spend our money. But hopefully not, because there's two Democrats that will save us, I swear. And their names are Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema. Manchin, West Virginia, Sinema, Arizona. And they're saying we are not going to sign off on this extra trillions of dollars of spending on infrastructure, which means it won't pass, which means, thankfully, you'll only get the original infrastructure bill hopefully passed to tackle this stuff without spending trillions more. Because at last check, inflation's a big problem, isn't it? Right? We live in a country now that is more expensive to live in because of inflation. And remember what inflation is. It is a tax on everyone, but particularly hits people hard who are poor or middle class because they simply can't absorb the extra cost. You're rich and, you know, the price of milk goes up or the price of lumber goes up if you're expanding your house. Okay, you got the money to kind of cover it and it hurts a little bit, but it's not too bad. When you're poor or you're middle class and you have to now cut back or shop differently at Stop and Shop or ShopRite or wherever the Food King, wherever you go to get food, that's a big problem. When you have to actually cut back on food that you get for your family, that's a problem. When gas continues to skyrocket and you don't have enough money to even put a full tank of gas in your car, that's a problem. And that hits the people that are poor and middle class most. And what does this president want to do? He wants to spend more, which at last check, and look, I'm not an economist, but I did take Econ 101, and I'm pretty sure when you print trillions of more dollars, that then the value of that dollar diminishes. Therefore, inflation goes up and things cost more to everybody. So that's what's going on with Joe Biden. You look at these polls, by the way, as far as this president. We're not even at a full-term pregnancy as far as the length of this administration from January 20th to 2021. And the things that they have screwed up all by their own doing is nothing short of remarkable. It really is. You think about this. I just talked about inflation, right? Fox News poll, 86% of Americans are deeply concerned about inflation, as they should be, because they see the cost of everything going up. Then you look at crime. You look at skyrocketing crime. We see it in New York City, the violent kind, right? When you talk about defunding the police and your Biden last summer in the summer of love 2020, you don't say a peep about all these riots going on in these cities from New York to Atlanta to Minneapolis to Seattle, the Portland, Los Angeles, Chicago. You don't say a thing about it. You only talk about police reform in the name of George Floyd. Of course, criminals will be emboldened and police will be demoralized. And we see it in the numbers. Again, I'm not just spouting my opinion with nothing to back it up. Retirements and resignations are at all-time highs. Think about this. Retirements, they're at 45%, they're up. That's nearly like half the police force basically saying, you know what? If I don't have to work anymore, I'm not going to do it. All right? So the minute I could get my pension, I am out. Because of the way the media portrays us, the fact that if we make even one small mistake in a split-second decision, we'll then be thrown into jail. We'll be painted as the bad guys. We'll have death threats against us, the very people that are trying to protect the poorest, the most vulnerable. So that's problem number two. Inflation, all right, more expensive, crime way up, we feel less safe. And then you have the border, which is, again, you put Kamala friggin' Harris in charge of this. She compared ICE to the KKK when she was a senator and a presidential candidate. And what a presidential candidate. I keep seeing her labeled as the former 2020 presidential candidate. She didn't even get to 2020.
She got to December of 2019. Didn't even get to Iowa. That's how badly she polled. So, of course, Biden chooses her because she checked off two boxes. Woman, woman of color. One, two. Qualifications? Who needs qualifications? I mean, what exactly did she accomplish as a senator from California? Does she reach across the aisle like Biden said he would do? She was voted, not voted, it was this website called GovTrack, and they're nonpartisan and everything, and then they went through her voting record, and they determined that she was the most liberal of all Democratic senators. Congratulations. You basically have like some sort of like older version of AOC as your vice president, right? Has she ever run a business? No, of course not. Does she have any foreign policy experience? No, of course not. But hey, boy, she really gave it to Brett Kavanaugh. Good enough for us. So there you go. That's your vice president. And what we have now on the border is her in charge. And 1.5 million people have come into this country since the beginning of the year. That is more than the population of 12 U.S. states. And I wonder why we would allow that to happen. You could say, well, we're inept and we're not going about the problem. Or is it intentional? So then you could turn Arizona blue, Florida blue, Texas almost blue, to the point where you got to spend a lot of money there if you're a Republican and you're a presidential candidate. Change the demographics, hold on to power. End of story. Just a theory. But when you see nothing being done in terms of this flow, after a while, you have to start to look to motive. All right. So again, let's count it down. We got inflation. We got crime. We have the border. And then we have Afghanistan. And boy, well, I mean, what a catastrophe. I know that you guys have been talking about this for the last 3 weeks on this show, on other shows, as you should. And this is why the president is now polling in the 20s when it comes to his handling of Afghanistan. I got to meet these people, by the way, the 23% that say, hey, we approve of the job that he's doing. Oh, yeah? Give me one thing you like. I'm curious. Because now you have Al-Qaeda, ISIS-K, you have other bad actors from Iran, and the Taliban. They have this big playground now. It's called Afghanistan. And they could sit there and plan attacks all day because now we have no presence on the ground there whatsoever. Oh, and the Afghans that are left there that are being slaughtered? You think any of the ones that actually survive are going to give us any intelligence in terms of any planning or anything going on there in terms of an attack on us that'll make 9/11 look small? So that's not going well either. So that's four fronts right there. Yet, here we have the president of the United States doesn't exactly inspire any confidence. And Anthony, let's cue up cut number three. This is utterly remarkable as far as, and again, I'm not doing this to mock anymore, because after a while, you start to think, okay, this may be a problem. Whatever the cut is, Anthony, for Joe Biden forgets this. Go ahead and play it. Go.
And they played, and my mind's going blank now. What's the song that is played where everybody is on the chair? Everybody, I can't remember it anyway. And that's the song that was played. So, you know, I don't know what the hell's going on here. I just had one little favor, you know, just that they played on Eagle's Wings.
What the hell is this? This is the person who's leading this country, the leader of the free world. I could play 100 of those things. And that's just for the past couple of months. In terms of, he should not be working. Forget, you know, maybe being a consultant to some sort of like, you know, political think tank or something like that, if you'd want that kind of consulting. But he's the president of the United States, and he just rambles like an old guy in a deli sitting alone at the end of the bar. It just, again, I can mock it, I can laugh at it, but now I'm disturbed, right? When that's the stuff he's talking about, when you got everything else going on in this country. And on top of that, I am done in terms of saying, well, Joe Biden's a gaff machine. Oh, you know, it's kind of his charm. It's like when John Madden used to say, well, that's just Brett Favre being Brett Favre whenever Favre would throw an interception. You remember that, Jet fans. But now it's like, it's no longer gaffes. The guy lies. He lies on a consistent basis. He's not a good person, right? He lies as a reflex, almost. And don't give me butt Trump if you're a Democrat out there, because at last check, Joe Biden's in charge now, and we're going to concentrate on him, okay? So let's play cut two guy here, guys, because here he says he went to the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh after that slaughter that happened there, that mass shooting. He said, well, I visited. You visited, really? That's funny, because the people that run the place said you never visited, and there was one news report of you visiting after that happened, but he says it anyway. Cut two, go.
It was, I remember spending time at the, you know, going to the Tree of Life synagogues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the Tree of Life synagogue, the head guy there is saying Joe Biden never came here. We don't know what he's talking about. Joe Biden doesn't know what he's talking about. But when he is trying to make an argument, he tends to lie. Like, oh, we'll get every American out of Afghanistan. We didn't get every American out of Afghanistan. And now you're going to start to hear the stories, thanks to social media, as far as Americans there, their families, the ones that couldn't get out, those students at the American University in Kabul. Watch. You think the story is going to go away? It only gets worse. It only gets much worse. And then the face of the administration isn't Kamala, because like we talked about, you could find Edward Snowden before you could find Kamala Harris. And it's not Joe Biden, because he's hidden from the press, too. He makes some statements yesterday about that new Texas abortion law, and then he runs off like Usain Bolt without taking any questions, right? The Bo Jackson of presidencies. The only time he moves fast is to run away from reporters. But then we have Jen Psaki, and she's the face of the administration, because she's the one you see every day, right? And boy, I mean, the lies are piling up. Her credibility is shooting down. Get a load of this one. Go. Cut one.
Why does the president support abortion when his own Catholic faith teaches abortion is morally wrong?
He believes that it's a woman's right, it's a woman's body, and it's her choice.
Why does the president, who does he believe then should look out for the unborn child?
He believes that it's up to a woman to make those decisions, and up to a woman to make those decisions with her doctor. I know you've never faced those choices, nor have you ever been pregnant, but for women out there who have faced those choices, this is an incredibly difficult thing. The president believes their rights should be respected.
So in other words, Joe Biden's been pregnant, so therefore he could relate to this, unlike that male reporter who asked the question. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. Joe Concha filling in for Mark Simone, Mr. New York on 710 WOR.
In for Mr. New York, Mark Simone on 710 WOR.
Here's Joe Concha.
Jobs report out today for August. Hey, 235,000 jobs were created. That's the bad news, because 720,000 jobs were expected. Almost 500,000 fewer were created than expected. Looking at some headlines right now, let's see. One, terrible news. Two, big miss. Three, major jobs disappointment. Four, abysmal. Five, awful. Six, minuscule. Seven, massive slowdown. Eight, worst case scenario for economists. Those are some of your headlines. That's some of your analysis as far as the job report is concerned under this president. And look, if Joe Biden wants to create jobs, he should really look at, you know, states that are run by GOP governors. Based on the latest data, 16 of the top 20 states for recovering jobs from the pandemic are led by Republican governors. So maybe that's the model we should be looking at for 2024. In case Trump doesn't run, then you have perhaps, I don't know, this guy DeSantis in Florida, who is like Trump, except a younger, more nimble, less gaffe-prone Trump. I wouldn't mind having him as the nominee. That would be pretty formidable. You know, you put him with like a Tim Scott or a Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, and then you tell me how Joe and Kamala are going to beat that sort of combination. And then you can make the argument, and I'm open to it completely, that if Trump were to run, given the performance of this president, he'd have a good shot. The question is, at 78, does he really want to do that? Anyway, Joe Concha filling in for Mark Simone. We have Bernie Goldberg, formerly of Fox News and CBS. He's coming up on the other side of the hour. But first, let's go to the news.
Now more on the Mark Simone Show on 710 WOR.
In for Mr. New York, here's Joe Concha.
I want to get to Richie in Staten Island before we get to the great Bernie Goldberg. Richie, tell me what's on your mind today on this Friday, buddy.
Joe, I think everybody's missing the point about Afghanistan.
All right.
I think this is going to lead us into another war, and that's what they want. We had peace and prosperity for 4 years under President Trump. These guys need a war. So as soon as the Taliban or ISIS does something wrong, they're going to say, oh, we got to go back in.
God, I hope that's not the case, Richie. And then thanks for the call. But your sentiment is not exactly an anomaly. I've heard this from several people that, you know, war is good for business, so to speak, and it helps keep people in power, particularly administrations that are flailing as this one is. But I hope that's not the case. I mean, I just think, I know guys that served in Afghanistan, and the fact that, you know, what they did and what they sacrificed, and seeing their friends, you know, die, and to just see all of it just get completely just reset, right back to 2001. That's got to be the most frustrating thing in the world. But it's hard not to imagine a scenario where we don't have to send troops back in, given the powder keg that's over there that you just mentioned, Richie, right? It's Al-Qaeda. It's ISIS-K. It's obviously Iranian elements that are there now as well. The Chinese are involved. And obviously, the Taliban, not exactly our friends. So the minute one attack against the U.S. is launched from there, that's probably the beginning of the end. I think it already is. But the final nail in the coffin as far as this administration is concerned. But also, the fact that we might just have to redo this all over again, the American people will not have a stomach for that, unfortunately. Anyway, let's get to Bernie Goldberg. And look, Bernie is brutally honest. I like the fact that he's not going to come on here and tell you what you want to hear. He's going to tell you how it is. He sticks to his opinions, perspectives, has done it very consistently, going all the way back to my favorite book of all time, which is Bias, that he wrote, I believe it was 1996. And talk about balls. I mean, the guy writes this thing while he's at CBS News to talk about bias at CBS News. I believe it started with a Wall Street Journal op-ed and then it eventually led to the book. But Bernie's had several books since then. Obviously, now you go to BernardGoldberg.com and you can sign up to read his columns on a consistent basis, which are excellent. And it's not just about media, by the way. Bernie is a Swiss Army knife as far as talking about anything that's hot in terms of politics, in terms of culture. So, Bernie, I have now really set expectations very high for you. Thanks for joining. Good to talk to you again.
I've been called many things over the years, most of which I can't repeat on WOR radio. However, I have never been called a Swiss Army knife, but I like the analogy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I use it for myself sometimes when pitching. But hey, I want to talk to you about this first poll. I want to talk about media first, and then we'll go into some other matters. But this comes from the Pew Research Center. And whenever I write my media columns, I like to base it on studies or analysis, not just talk out of my butt, because you have to have a foundation for the argument. And what they found, and they're nonpartisan, is that 35% of Republicans today say they trust national news organizations. That's down from 70% in 2016. So half, basically, it is gone. But yet, Democrats' trust in mass media is near a record high. So it just seems like whenever you hear trust in media is at an all-time low, it's really only among half the country, while the other half says, hey, I kind of like what I'm hearing. Can you kind of break that down for me?
Yeah, I think it's really simple, actually, Joe. The reason Democrats and liberals, generally speaking, don't have a problem with the mainstream media is because their values are reflected by the mainstream media. So if you're a liberal and you have liberal values and you get liberal values masquerading as straight news, you're perfectly happy. And the reason conservatives aren't happy is because most of the news is coming, and this is not really a crazy opinion or anything, but most of the news comes from liberal news organizations. Almost all of the major news organizations have a liberal slant to their coverage of stories and certainly on their editorial page. So Republicans and conservatives see bias and liberals see honesty. The liberals are wrong and conservatives are right in this particular case.
I think Charles Krauthammer said it best, the late, great Charles Krauthammer, who said that Fox News is successful because it found its niche audience, half the country, right? So it's like it's Fox and then there's everybody else. We're talking to Bernie Goldberg. BernardGoldberg.com is the website. You were with Real Sports for a while. Obviously, we talked about you were at CBS News for a long time. I want to say, what was it, 28 years? And then, obviously, Fox News, you were a contributor there, mainly appeared on Bill O'Reilly's program, Weekends with Bernie, I believe it was, every Monday. You could see you in the B block there. But then you went to HBO and Real Sports, and you left there earlier this year. And I want to read back your own quote to you, and then maybe you could expand on it. You said, quote, I have no problem with anyone's personal politics, but when it intrudes on the integrity of journalism, I have a problem. I had enough. I said, that's it. I'm gone. So was it one or two particular other correspondents on Real Sports that were getting your goat, or was it the producers and just the general angles that they were taking on certain stories where you said they're not being honest anymore, they're pushing an agenda?
Well, there was a specific thing, and it may sound minor in the big scheme of things, but I'll tell you what it was. In the December show, each December we have a round table of all the correspondents. We talk about the big events of that year,
And this time around, because social justice, so-called social justice issues, was big in the news, that was a big part of the December roundtable. And at one point I said, people go to sports traditionally because it's an oasis. It's a way to get away from the daily barrage of politics. And one reporter said, those days are over. And he said it in a condescending way, like, you know, like I'm old fashioned, that I think sports should be an oasis from politics. And then I said, I tuned into a National Hockey League playoff game, and there was a ceremony before the game. And one of the players said, and this is a verbatim quote, racism is everywhere. I said, I changed the channel because I didn't tune in to get a lecture about what a crummy country America is. And then Brian Gummel uttered a sentence, and I will give you the word-for-word sentence, and that was my deciding factor where I said, I've had enough of this. Brian Gummel said, well, racism is everywhere. And the other correspondents, all of whom, whose politics are liberal to far, far left wing, sat there, you know, with, you know, like they were bumps on a log. If I don't want to be part of an organization that thinks racism is everywhere, I said I won't wash my hands in the same sink with a bigot. I hate bigots, but racism is not everywhere. Everywhere is a big place, and I just felt I didn't want to be part of that.
Do you think, and, Bernie, that the other folks in the room were scared almost to say, hey, wait a minute, I think you're going way too far with that, because they know that you challenge this stuff and cancel culture is a big deal, and then it automatically goes from, it's not a disagreement anymore, it's, well, maybe you're a racist and you actually support that stuff. Like, that's how childish the arguments have become.
I think if there was a variety of political opinions on that show, that might have been the case. It might have been, well, you never take on the anchorman. Let me tell your audience some behind the scenes stuff. You never challenge the anchorman because he's the anchorman, you know? So there might have been that. But in the case of my colleagues at Real Sports, all of them are either liberal or far, far left wing. And I think they pretty much either agreed that racism is everywhere, or it was close enough that they weren't going to make an issue of it.
Wow. And we're talking to Bernie Goldberg. BernardGoldberg.com is the website. Do you think that that whole room was liberal because they live in this bubble of New York or Washington, where all these major media centers are located? And you look at the way those cities vote, right? The 2020 election, I think Donald Trump got 9% of the vote in Manhattan. Maybe he got 4% in Washington. So it becomes a conformity thing that, okay, I won't get in any trouble if I just kind of go along with everybody's saying. Or is it just a matter of just the culture and the environment and the Kool-Aid puts people in these positions or these perspectives where maybe they didn't have it going into the business, but now it's better for your career if you stay on that road?
I think they came into the business with those views, and the business just either encouraged them to hold on to their liberal views, or certainly there was no penalty for having liberal views in the newsroom. Listen, I was in a major newsroom, CBS News, for 28 years, as you mentioned, Joe. And if you're slightly to the right of center, and by the way, let's say I did 1,000 stories in those years, just to pick a number, I would venture to say you can go through them with a fine-tooth comb and won't find one example of any conservative bias in any of them, okay? You just won't. And for the longest time, I wasn't a conservative. I was an old-fashioned liberal. You know, wow. I figured free speech, you know, and disagree with somebody, let them have their say, you have your say, and all that. But if you're slightly to the right of center, and I mean slightly, you stick out like a sore thumb. But if you're to the left of center, no matter how far to the left, this is an important point that I made in my first book, Bias. By the way, it came out in 2001. 1996 was the Wall Street Journal op-ed.
That was the op-ed. Thank you for the correction.
That touched off the media version of World War III. But what I said in Bias, was that liberals in the news business don't see themselves as liberals. I know that sounds crazy. They see themselves as reasonable, as moderate, as middle of the road. But if you're a conservative, they can spot that 10,000 miles away through a brick wall because you are so out of sync with everybody else in the newsroom.
And maybe sometimes it's better to get out, Bernie, into the real world.
That's why bias occurs. Joe, that's why bias occurs. You know, I also said there's no great when I wrote Bias in 2001, there's no great conspiracy. People don't come into the newsroom, give secret handshakes and secret salutes and say, how are we going to screw those Republicans today? It didn't work that way back then. How it worked was groupthink. Just about everybody in the newsroom thought the same way from a liberal point of view. So you got a liberal bias in the news. Now, 2021, it's different. I do believe, and this is not a crazy conspiracy, I do believe people come into work in the morning. When Donald Trump was president, they said, how are we going to find some way to go after Donald Trump today? And if you were in a conservative, talk radio or Fox News or Newsmax or something, I think people come in on some shows, not all shows, but on the opinion shows, and they say, how are we going to screw Joe Biden today? Now, Joe Biden, unfortunately, has given the media plenty of ammunition to go after him. And it's legitimate going after him. So, and Afghanistan is only the most recent example of his incompetence. I don't think incompetence is too strong a word. I just think the man is in over his head.
And polls reflect that, right? He's getting 20%, 25% approval on his handling of that. And I want everybody to go to BernardGoldberg.com to read, it's okay to admit both sides had the Afghanistan withdrawal wrong, because it really is, again, for once, you're getting something that's sober, lucid, and doesn't cheerlead for one side or the other, but looks at the big picture. So maybe you're going to read some things in there you disagree with, but it may make you think a little bit. BernardGoldberg.com is the website. And Bernie, I wish we had another hour, because I could talk to you for 24/7 cable news. I could talk to you for 24/7, because it is such an interesting perspective. But thanks again for joining us, and hopefully we could do it again soon. And enjoy your Labor Day weekend, sir.
Thank you, Joe. The pleasure really is all mine. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Guys, that's great. Joe Concha filling in for Mark Simone. I'm not kidding when I say The Bias is my favorite book of all time, and it got me into media reporting. It did, because it really opened my eyes to, like, wow, this is a big problem. Bernard Goldberg, thank you. We'll be back with more of The Mark Simone Show in just a moment on 710 WOR.